Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and what a show we have.
Good morning, sir. Yeah, this is going to be a fun show, and it's been a whirlwind week. We've done a couple of remote broadcasts, been out to the Alley Awards. We did Big Data. Was that Monday evening? It's all a blur to me now.
One right after the other.
But the fun never stops, and this really is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Rexana Hussain with Rexana Wright. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Chief Solutions Officer with Raise Capital, Ms. Carol McCown. How you doing?
I am awesome. I'm so happy to be here today.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Mission and purpose of Raise. Give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch, if you will.
Well, it's very exciting. The purpose of our company is to work with for-profit businesses by elevating their brand, aligning them with nonprofit initiatives, building nonprofit cause into the DNA of their company.
So now, I've heard the term social entrepreneur that kind of touches in this area. Do you consider yourself a social entrepreneur?
Oh, I would definitely consider myself an entrepreneur whose focus is on social impact. Absolutely.
So now, in today's interconnected world, do you see companies doing that more or less?
You know, I think they have to do it more because consumers are watching, and companies that don't do it are going to lose market share.
Can you share maybe some of your experience about how companies got their feet wet in this area? Because some companies are like, hey, our business is making widgets, and that's what we focus on is making widgets. And I think that your mission is a little broader than that. And if you can share maybe some stories about how a company that makes widgets can expand and maybe get more active in the community and serve kind of a bigger purpose.
Well, I mean, the first one that comes to mind and the biggest one who has kind of excelled in this in the marketplace is Tom's Shoes. A lot of people have heard of Tom's Shoes. If you buy a pair of shoes from Tom's, then they gift a pair of shoes to a child that's in need. Our objective is not just to work with social entrepreneurs who have that in mind, but to take big business that's been in business for a long time and help their management rethink how a widget like selling a jar of peanut butter might feed a hungry child.
Right. So now, but how do you make the management first has to be open to that idea, right?
Like, oh, definitely. It's definitely a challenge to basically go in at the top level, CEO level down, and change mindsets. It's a heart change. It's a mind change. Mm-hmm. It's making them think that the give back to the community is equally as important as their bottom line.
So now, but how does that conversation evolve? Are they approaching you and saying, hey, we'd like to, you know, kind of take our company to another level by going deeper into the community like this? And hey, Carol, I need your team to help us do that.
We hope to get to that point where people will come to us to do that. But basically, what's happened so far is we talk to someone that has an interest within the business. It could be a marketing person. They could be a person who's associated with their corporate social responsibility. It could be that they're doing a cause marketing program for a product in their business, and it's not authentic. So we have to go in at CEO level and say, hey, you know, consumers know whether or not this is authentic or not. And so you have to make it, build it into the business model. It has to make sense to them financially for them to understand it. If they understand that consumers will purchase from them or companies will do business with them because of the cause, then they'll embrace it. Mm-hmm. And then they'll kind of, you know, build it into the way that
into the DNA
company,
and the culture of the company.
It has to be built into the culture of the company.
Right.
The fun thing about it too is that young people now expect to do work with businesses that give back. It's as important to them as the money they make. And so to recruit great talent, business leaders have to start thinking this way. It's a new paradigm. It's a paradigm shift. But it is the answer to big solutions to big problems around the world. We can't rely on our government to do it anymore. Business leaders have got to step up to the plate. People want to be involved with purpose. People want a purpose, and they want to be able to do it where they spend their most time, at work.
So say more, if you will, about this idea of authentic, because I get the sense this is critical and that maybe this is one of the places that, a great many organizations are making a pretty damaging mistake.
Let me just give you one great example of that. I had a conversation this week with Turner Broadcasting. And I love Turner. I love CNN. I love the impact they can have on the world and do through sharing news around the world. However, their gift back is to, from the corporate social responsibility, is to the Atlanta Symphony. Love the Atlanta Symphony. But I don't understand how the Atlanta Symphony and Turner Broadcasting, and this is a bold statement, how they intersect. And I have to ask, what do Turner's employees care about the, you know, as a whole, about what's going on with the Atlanta Symphony? And I might say to their leadership, I might say, you know what, for the money that you're spending on the Atlanta Symphony pledge, perhaps you could put that same money into creating media that talks about good things that corporations are doing around the world and do a segment on that as your give back, because that is your DNA. You're a media company, and that's what you should be doing. So that's an example of how it might not be an authentic to the DNA of their company, the gift that they give back.
And that's because I would think that they don't think, when they're building their corporate structure, that, hey, I have to have somebody that's thinking about my nonprofit partners, right?
That's
right.
So
then all of a sudden some executive or their spouse says, I like the symphony, and they're,
yes,
you know, they're saying you should donate money.
Yes.
And they're like, hey, okay, give them some money.
It's haphazard, you know, because a lot of times people will write a check to make a donation to an organization one year, and then they'll have a change. The next CEO's wife says, well, this year we're going to give it the ballet. Well, what it happens with that nonprofit organization is it leaves a tremendous hole,
right,
in their budget. And so then it leaves them being a tin cup. And the premise that I want to bring to the table is nonprofit organizations should not have to bang a tin cup. They should not be spending their time raising money. They should be spending their time making solutions to problems, bringing the arts to the community, helping the homeless, helping bring education. Education in the state of Georgia is like 47th overall. Okay, so instead, if your organization is tied to education at all, then you should automatically be building into your business structure alignment with nonprofits that feed education. And not only writing a check to them, but giving your talent,
right,
the talent of your organization to their organization to make them more impactful, holding the nonprofit accountable. Building a sustainable solution, not just throw
some cash at them and
let's
walk away.
Let's just not throw it against the wall and walk away.
And then in their own head, they think, oh, look, we're helping out, because in their head they wrote some check.
Yep, yep.
You know, that'll be here today. Yeah. It may not be there tomorrow.
This is another example, if I've got time to talk about
it.
You
have all the time in the world.
There is the last year, I mean, obviously I'm noticing every single thing in the marketplace. Well, there's Land O'Lakes creamer. I drank Land O'Lakes half and half every morning of my life.
Right.
And on the carton, it said that Land O'Lakes, if you would take the carton, take the QR code, go onto your website, key in your name and the QR code, that they would donate 50 cents back to Toys for Tots. And I'm thinking, I'm in this business, and mm-hmm, I wouldn't do that.
Right. And okay? You're paying attention to stuff
and
like
I'm paying attention to it. So what good does that do to the brand Land O'Lakes?
Right.
Okay, so my suggestion to a Land O'Lakes would be, hey, let's look at dairy. There are literally villages in Africa where the children have no hair because they have no protein in their diet. Instead of donating $100,000 to Toys or Tots, which has nothing to do with the DNA of your company, let's put two cows in a micro dairy.
Right.
Let's grow more cows. Let's get milk. And then when I'm buying that carton of milk, if I already know I'm going to give away $100,000, just give 50 cents off of my purchase
anyway. Right.
And you know what would happen? Consumers would rush to the store, and when they were making a choice between Land O'Lakes or another creamer, they'd say, I helped give a child the nutrition that he needed to live.
And
okay?
Right, and that information is the those kind of stories are the food like for social media. That's something that you would share on your Facebook page. That would be something that
That's what we would share on RaiseLink, our new social media platform for the socially responsible.
Right, isn't it? But that's a story. That's not like some company that's writing a check. You're not sharing that.
Well, it is a story.
You can take a picture of a cow in a village.
That's
and then
right.
It becomes real.
And it's a story that CNN can put their you know, social consciousness around. It's a win-win situation for everybody. It's a win for the consumer because as we make choices, we're able to make a difference. It's a win for the corporation because we're going to elevate their brand and hopefully build profitability. And it's a win for society because we're absolutely having the most talented people in the world look at societal problems in a different way.
Right. And it's not in the way that you're relying on a government and hoping that they throw some cash at it. You're getting the whole you need some government money, but if the money can be raised from the individuals that are that feel that it's important, I think that that's more sustainable over time.
Well, I mean, it's so funny because this is just the way I think. When I was looking at the political debates, you've got the Republicans on one side that are pro-business. They want to grow business. They want to build big business. You got the Democrats on the other side that want to help humanitarian need and all of that. Well, I think that this is the catalyst for both. It is pro-business, grow business, grow business in a way that builds sustainability to offset the humanitarian problems that are out there, eliminate some of the government spending altogether, and the government should be rewarding companies that do this.
Right. Now, in your organization, do you work the side of from the business side, or you work the nonprofit side, or both sides?
We really work both sides. Our goal is
to be a matchmaker.
We're a matchmaker, but we also like to change mindsets. Our goal is to take people with affluence and influence and change them from success to significance. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, though, we also work with the nonprofits. We're in competition with their tin cup banging. We really are. But our goal is to make them be able to share with the world how they're being accountable and to actually create a social ROI that's measurable for the businesses to be able to get their arms around what kind of impact they're having from the gifting that they're giving back and the money that consumers are spending at their company.
So how do you attack the ROI issue?
We have an expert that goes in and he would look at it. Just say, let's look at the cow situation. It's not that I'm giving two cows and that's $1,000. It's that I am creating a healthy community. Well, there's an ROI.
Because that's a multiplier
that.
Effect. A cow is a cow, but the milk that it gives is multiplied by all the children and the people that live in the village.
Well, that's right. It increases health, overall
right.
health in a community.
And minimizes,
people can work
right.
when they're healthy.
They're productive. They're healthy.
That's right. That's right.
And they're not, when someone's sick, now somebody has to take care of them. There's all these extra
That's
costs
right.
involved.
That's right. So we have an expert who has written a book on social ROI who is affiliated with our company, a guy by the name of Tom Ralser, brilliant, brilliant guy, who would go in for the corporation and the nonprofit and say, this is really what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
And that way corporations know that the money that they're putting out there, that the effort that their employees are putting out there is worth their time, their effort, and consumers then can get a report back on what they've done.
So they get a report card of how well they're doing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's good stuff.
Now, is this this kind of talk about the this social good and having a company that has multiple bottom lines, a social bottom line as well. Does this only work for really big companies or can it trickle down to smaller companies as well?
No, it absolutely can work for a smaller company. I mean, just think about a company that might be affiliated with a local elementary school and then think about the parent base that could support that company. You think about a pizza place that might support PTA initiative, mm-hmm. you know, by giving back. And it's already being done, but we need to do a better job of letting consumers know about what these companies are doing.
But how would, like, a pizza place, like, they should look at their footprint. They should say, okay, who are the people we serve? And then
that's right. Really, and then figure out a way to really serve those people. And by serving those people then become patrons of that particular place over the next door neighbor when they have a choice of where to go eat.
Right.
So how do you get the conversation with the Land O'Lakes, or for that matter, how do you get a conversation like this going with the right person inside an elementary school or a pizza joint? Is that a challenge?
Of course it's a challenge because it's a new concept, but it's doing things like this. Mm. It's talking to guys like you, and we're pushing this out through social media, but you know, it's a contagious conversation.
Yeah.
You know, if you talk to one executive or one group and it's been successful for them, they like to share what's going on with their organization with others.
Mm-hmm.
We're also trying to align ourselves with organizations that have their own ecosystem of people around them that they could lead us to. One of our larger clients, BCD Travel, is connected to 6,000 major corporations around the world and the airlines. Some of their corporations are, for example, pharmaceutical companies. Well, they have expiring medicines. Those medicines we could donate, say, to City Hope International, and Delta Airlines could fly right. them and stop a cholera outbreak. And then we have a connector. So we're looking for businesses that are connected in an ecosystem that might be able to make a difference that way.
And this RaiseLink, say more about that. That's exciting.
Oh, it's very exciting. It is the social media platform for the socially responsible. We link together three groups, brands that take a stand, causes that make a difference, and consumers who care. And it's the place where brands, if you are doing something out there that's wonderful for free, you can set up, basically it's a marketing one page, where you can talk about your products and services, but you can also talk about what you're doing to make a difference. And then consumers can find you. So consumers want to know who they're buying from. As far as the causes out there, if you're a nonprofit organization and you want people to know really what you do, but nobody knows how to find you, this is where consumers can find you by what we set up as humanitarian pillars. If you're related to homelessness, then tell your story. And it's a place for you to be accountable. People are tired of giving money to nonprofit organizations, writing a blind check, and assuming that you're doing something with it. We want to see what you're doing. We want to see blog posts. We want to see videos. We want to see photos. And that's what RaiseLink is about, so people can tell their story about what they're doing that's good for the world.
Now, with the downturn of the economy of the last few years, are you seeing a consolidation of some of the nonprofits where there's less of them maybe today than there
no,
were?
No, you know what? Nonprofit is growing like crazy.
Really?
Oh, my goodness. It is. Because the need just seems to get bigger and bigger, and we don't seem to be coming up with solutions.
Right. I would think the need is there, but I would think that individuals with less money are giving less. Is that
actually,
not accurate?
Actually, donations are up.
Really?
Donations
really?
Are up.
So there's always people always find money to give to causes they care about?
I think it makes you feel good to give money.
Mm-hmm.
If you're feeling down in the dumps, if you give something to somebody else, and I believe this is just a godly principle, the more generous you are, the more you give, the more you serve others, the better you feel as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
It is just, that is just a, you know, an overarching truth. And so I don't see as giving as people want to figure out different ways to give.
And they want their dollar to actually do something.
That is the thing that's going to be most important to nonprofits in the future.
Mm-hmm.
With the age of the Internet, the way it is now, everything people can see and they can peel back the onion.
Right.
And so we want them to be transparent. Transparency is key.
And
it's key.
Now, in your business, you're always on the lookout for corporations that want to kind of do a better job leveraging their foundation dollars or their giving dollars?
We're not really focused on the foundation as much as we are. We are looking for corporations that have leadership that want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. We look at all aspects of the corporation, not only their foundation and their corporate social responsibility piece, but we look at how they do business. We want to know how their employees can intersect with their community.
Oh, so it goes much deeper than
just... Yeah, they're tapping into the culture.
It's the culture. It's a culture change. It's not just, oh, you know, we have a foundation and come, let's write a grant.
Right. So it's more than that.
Yeah, in fact, I personally think that's old school. I think that will end up not being the way things work. Like I said just a minute ago with CNN, their foundation gives money.
Right.
I want the CEO of CNN to go, why?
Right.
I want us to ask the question, why?
Right.
Not what we're doing, but why we're doing what we're doing. And how can we empower our employees? How can we empower our leadership to be people of significance? How can we make a difference in the world? That's what I'm asking these corporations to do.
So what are some of the nonprofit causes that you've had an opportunity to impact through this work?
Well, one of them I spoke about a minute ago was City Hope International. They are wonderful. They are an international company that deliver medicines to people in need. They're incredible. And there's other groups that I'd like for you to take a look at. There's a company, my mind has gone blank.
But it's not just local companies, right? You work with local companies. Like if your company has a footprint that's only local or regional, it makes sense to align yourself with local or regional.
Absolutely.
Right?
If you have a footprint for your company that's international, then you better be thinking internationally.
Yeah.
If you have a company that your footprint is in Brookhaven, then you should be doing something in Brookhaven.
And everybody in Brookhaven should know it.
Oh, yeah. And everybody in Brookhaven would love it,
right?
Because they would understand what your issue is. Here's just a fun example. Atlanta Union Mission houses 300,000 homeless people a year.
Wow.
300,000 homeless people are taken off our streets because of that mission. So we went and talked to them, and we're saying, well, you know, what are your needs? Well, this is a really funny need, but it's underwear. They can't use donated underwear. You know, they can wash clothes and hand that out. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, let's get in touch with somebody who sells underwear. I mean, let's do a deal where you buy two pairs of underwear and one's gifted.
To the,
And if that's happening in Atlanta Union Mission, then it's happening at every homeless shelter across the country.
Sure.
Well, what a brand differentiator.
Right.
Let's get Michael Jordan on that.
Right.
You know, let's talk about things that make a difference. And so that's what I would do. You know, we would go to Fruit of the Loom, or we would go to Hanes, and we'd say, which one of you wants to do this? Instead of sponsoring the next sporting event, let's sponsor something that brings homeless people off the street and helps them.
Now, does this this strategy resonate more with the leaders, or does it resonate more with the challenger brands in a typical industry?
Wow, that's a very good question. I think it's such a new concept that we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that meeting might come easier with the challenger brand, and then the leader gets real interested once you get a little murmur going.
It very well could be. Yeah, I'll be really honest with you. When I've had an opportunity to walk into the leadership team of a company, there has not been any instant where it wasn't halfway through the conversation. You know, you walk in, they want to talk about just general things, that there isn't an aha moment where the CEO goes, I don't care if we make any more money or not. This is just the right thing to do. And you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's like just having conversation is where it starts.
Right.
Do I have time for one more story?
Absolutely.
This is a great one.
Lay it on us.
We have humanitarian pillars, and one of them is environment. Of course, the use of energy is a big topic of conversation. Well, there was a group that we brought on board that's sort of our energy expert, and we want to bring for-profit people on board that are energy experts because we want them to align with nonprofits who are dealing with that so we can hold the accountability piece. Anyway, to make a long story short, there is a huge LED manufacturer in China who has created the most intelligent LED lighting. Well, his job, this energy guy that that's our consultant's job was to help them get that new lighting marketed in the United States because it saves somewhere around 50% of utility costs, lighting costs, versus a fluorescent bulb, which is what we have all over the United States. So anyway, I met with my attorney, and I said, okay, I'm going to have this conversation. I want to talk to him about branding at Raise because I'm trying to get this brand out. And he said, you know, Carol, he's not going to care about Raise. You know, he's Chinese. All they care about is what you're going to do for them, how much money you're going to bring to them, and what their manufacturing capacity is going to be. They're very analytical that way. So don't talk about it. So the night before the meeting, this is the truth, I have a dream. And in the dream, it basically, I heard, do not deny what it is you're doing. Tell him the truth. So I'm in the meeting with him the next day. And sure enough, we start down the very politically correct way of having discussion and doing business and all of that. And it turned time to talk about Raise and what we might do for him. And I stopped. And everybody on my team looks at me like, what's she going to do?
Ruh-roh.
And I said, let me tell you why I'm doing this first. Well, the man lit up like a Christmas tree. And his statement was, CEO, major Chinese organization. He said, Carol, it's bigger than a light bulb.
That's right.
He immediately texted back.
It.
We were chosen, having never sold a light bulb in our lives, to bring this intelligent lighting to the United States. And now we're proud owners of Raise Energy Solutions. And then a portion of every light bulb that we sell goes back to, say, a hospital in Malawi where the energy's turned off at 6 o'clock at night. So God forbid you need a cesarean section
right in the evening
at 8 o'clock.
Right.
Well, we're going to be providing power and lighting to orphanages and hospitals and all of that through our brand.
Right.
So anybody that you know out there that needs LED lighting, then please get them from us because we're challenged to go out and compete against the big boys, you know, against GE and Sylvania and Philips. And, you know, we're ready. So it's pretty exciting. It's exciting stuff.
Well, that's where, I guess, significance and success merge, right?
That's right.
Right in your office.
That's our goal. That's our goal.
I actually saw the story coming as it was developing. But when you said I had a dream, I thought you were going to say I had a drink. But still, the end game was.
Well, after this interview, I'll probably go have a drink. So, a Bloody Mary would taste good about now.
So on the corporate side of things, how does working with you start? What do we get together and talk things through? Walk us through the early part of that.
Yeah, probably. Well, the first step is that we just do an initial conversation. Then we do an assessment. We'll go into your company. We'll uncover all area aspects of your business from, like I said, we'll look at your corporate social responsibility. We'll look at the way you purchase through your procurement processes. We'll look at your employee interaction with their community and volunteerism. And we'll just look at the DNA of your company and we'll analyze what makes sense. How would your company make the biggest impact on the world or in your community that you serve? And at that point, then we basically come in as your chief solutions officer, and we sit with your C-suite of executives, and we pound your company into a company that takes a stand, and we elevate your brand, and then we tell your story. The most beautiful part of this is the stories that we're going to be able to tell about you. You won't even have to tell them about yourself.
Right.
Our goal is to go into places like Atlanta Business Chronicle and let there be a segment in that issue about companies that are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
To go into places like Headline News and have a branded section that says, look at what this company did over here. How many people have now got dairies in Africa because of an initiative that Land O'Lakes did. Stories like that would be told. But that's how it works from start to finish.
All right. So where can our listeners go to get more information, maybe set up a meaningful conversation with you and your team?
That would be awesome. We would love that. Our website is www.raiseglobalservices.com for our for-profit partners. Our nonprofit website is www.raiseglobalpartners.org. And just for fun, if you are in the state of Georgia, go to www.raisegeorgia.org and join the movement. It's very exciting.
There's room for everybody there.
There is. We're here for the world and to create a better place, make a major difference.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio, and I think it would be fun, Lee. I don't know if you'd be up for this, and maybe you would be as well, but we got to have you back on, maybe come on with a corporate partner, client of yours, maybe some of these causes you're serving. I just think it makes for a very inspiring conversation, and it could really be significant and have a genuine impact. Would you guys be up for that sometime?
Oh, yeah, I'd love it. I'd love it.
All right.
All right. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
That would be fabulous. I'd love it.
Next up on Atlanta Business Radio today, we have with us from Ruxana Writes, Miss Ruxana Hussein. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. Are you all fired up about joining some cause
and supporting it? Oh, yes. That was very inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you can walk out of the studio without being fired up about something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your work. Presumably it involves writing, but I have a feeling it goes beyond that and certainly has some real meaningful impact. What kind of problems are you solving? Solutions are you offering folks out there?
I mainly write for a bunch of different media outlets here in Atlanta. But really my strength is proofreading and copy editing, which is a dying profession nowadays. Given that we're texting and we're on social media all the time, a lot of people have forgotten how to spell, forgotten the importance of punctuation marks. And so that's where I come in and I try to help with the copy and make sure it's all right to put it out there.
So now, do you have a journalism background or more of just English writing, editing background?
I have a background in corporate communications mainly, and then I've done a lot of writing. I'm pretty good at really effectively communicating stories. And so that's really my strength and that's my forte, and I try to help people with that.
You mentioned proofreading and editing. Is there a difference in the two? Or
yes. Nowadays, people kind of use both the terms interchangeably.
Right.
That's how much it's dying out there. but really, it's the copy editing that comes before the proofreading. The copy editing is really you edit the copy. You've just got fresh copy in from the author or the writer. You've got to look for punctuation, typos, spellings, flow, the language that the author has used, the sentence structure. And you're still at a phase where you can go back with the author and you have liberties to make changes to the copy. But when you move into proofreading, that's like the very last stage before you go live or your copy gets printed at the publishers. At this point, you should have been done with all of your punctuation and grammar. Here, you're looking for formatting. You've already laid out your copy. It's in the design phase. You're making sure you have all the images right. You've got your captions right. You've got your font sizes right. A lot of things that can go wrong when you take copy and then you put it into design on a page, you could end up missing a lot of things.
Well, I'll tell you, even someone with your skills, and I certainly don't have them, but I know in writing the book that I had self-published, if I tried to proofread my own work, it would never work because it already said, I knew what it was supposed to say, right? You really do need a third party to do it, don't you?
You definitely need another pair of eyes to review your work, irrespective of whether you're writing for print or online media outlets. It's always important to have your, it's human. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just the way you're conditioned. You imagine and you assume that you're reading the right things, that there are entire words missing out of that sentence. And it reads completely different from what you meant to say. But it is how it is. I mean, it's like when you drive to work every day, you're using the same route and you don't notice anything new. Then one day you have someone else ride with you and they're pointing out new stores that have popped up. Oh, that's a new video store out there. And you're like, I've been driving this route for a few months now and I've never noticed this. It's just the way it works. So it's always good to have a fresh pair of eyes look at it and you just don't know what comes up.
Now, I believe you're the, or you were the president of ED 2010?
At 2010, yes. I am the current president of that group.
And what is that group?
Yes. So it's a group that brings together established Atlanta editors and those who are aspiring to be editors and those who are looking to get their dream magazine jobs and dream publishing jobs. And it's a forum for them to meet and to learn from the pros how you can, you know, go further in your career path, how you can be an editor, how you can put your name out there in the local publishing industry. So it's been a really nice experience. The Atlanta chapter was established last year in January, and then this year we've got some really interesting stuff going on. We've got quarterly speaker sessions where we have editors come and speak to our members. So we had in January, we had Sue Collins from Buckhaven Lifestyle speak about her life as an editor. Just recently, this April, we had Stephanie Davis-Smith from The Atlantan who came and talked to our members about her work. And then coming up in the future, we've got Nicole Williams from Pink Book. She's an established editor here in Atlanta. We've got Tiffany Gatlin from The Atlanta Tastemaker talking to us in October. So it's a great forum for people who are looking to be out there, to be writers, journalists in the media industry, for them to learn how to do what everyone else is doing.
So an association just for editors.
Yes.
How many editors are there floating around?
And this is not even, you know, it's a free, this is something that I do voluntarily just because of my interest in writing and editing.
Is there like 100? How many editors?
Our Facebook page right now has about 120 members. And it's a free membership group. It's open to it. All the events are free to attend.
And it's for networking and education?
Yes, it is. Yes, both. Mm-hmm.
Is it tough to get work? I mean, you mentioned a kind of a dead and dying discipline. Is it tough to get work?
It depends on how you put yourself out there. For me, it's been easy, especially given that nowadays people are into self-publishing and electronic publishing, and they don't go through the entire process of printing as it was traditionally done. So for me, I'm finding a lot of work doing copy editing and proofreading work for those who are going out there and doing e-publishing, doing you know, publishing books on their own.
So if somebody was self-publishing a book, they would write the book on their own and then give it to you right before they publish, and you would...
Yes. Yes, I would advise that. I would seriously advise that.
So you get involved towards the end. You don't get involved at the beginning of the, I'm thinking of writing a book. Can you help me do that? Or you're dealing with it at the end after they finish writing?
As a copy editor, it's towards the end. It's after all the copy is down together.
Now, I would imagine that you're, by having you kind of give it the once-over, that book now changes from something that might look not so great, because self-publishing, they'll take whatever words are on that page and put it in there, right? And then now it looks pretty professional when you're done with it, right? It looks like a real book.
It definitely, yes, does make a huge difference, especially because, and I've been a writer as well, so I know this from personal experience. When you're writing something and you're working with that copy for long periods of time and you're really involved with it, you tend to not be able to see things that I'm looking at from a proofreader's point of
view. But you can keep my voice, though?
Yes, definitely.
That's scary.
Yeah.
So is it a little bit like an artist from the marketing side of things? Like, do you build and maintain a portfolio and you share that with some of the people that you might have an opportunity to work with? Or in this case, some of the other people in the profession that you're trying to serve, you build up a portfolio, is that the right word?
Yes, that's the right word. Yes, portfolio of samples to show the work that you do, yes.
So anything in yours that you're particularly proud of?
Any celebrities, any awards, anything like that?
Well, last year was pretty good for me. I was a finalist for a 2012 Atlanta Press Club Award in Excellence for print journalism. This was for my work with actually a local magazine here. It's called Cover. It's a monthly print magazine for the South Asian community here in the Southeast. And so my work from that was selected. I did not win the award, but it was nice.
You should have. You were robbed.
But it was a nice experience. It was nice to be recognized. It's always nice to have your work out there. And it was nice to be in the company of, you know, some very well-established names in Atlanta. So it was good. And I also got an interview with a few celebrities last year. I was able to spend some time with Danny Seo. He is a green living expert. Celebrity lifestylist AJ Johnson. So it's been a good year. Yeah.
Is there some value, or at least perceived value, to the marketplace for you to say that you have experience in specific niches? Like, do you ever go after specific niches? Like, now you can be the green editor because you got to. Is that ever part of your strategy?
It helps, but for me, no. I've generally tried to be open with the subject and topic that I work. Sometimes it helps to be an expert in certain trends in certain areas. I like to keep it open what subjects I work with.
What about ghostwriting? Do you do any of that?
I haven't.
You have the skills, though.
I do. It depends how you want to work with this. I think when I like to see my name out there. I think that's the main thing for a lot of us is being able to see our name on the byline. So I like to see copy editor, Sana Hussein.
I know where you're headed with this. You're too lazy to do the writing. Exactly. You want her to go back and listen to all this stuff. Atlanta Business Radio shows. And then she writes.
She can write copy editor.
in that famous Lee voice.
Right. We'll preserve that voice.
So now what do you got coming up? What are you working on?
I've got some good stuff, actually, for this year, so I'm very excited. On my website, I've got two new initiatives that are coming up, so this show is actually perfect timing for me. Beginning May 1st, I will actually have, the first one is called 100% Work From Home, which is what I do. I am a work-from-home professional, and it's starting to be a really big trend that I'm seeing a lot of people who are self-employed working from home 100%. I've met a lot of people through networking, through my own group of friends that are doing that now. And so I'm looking to profile people who work from home 100% and how they do it and their journey to success. And, you know, maybe that inspires other people and gives them ideas and learning tools on how they can do it themselves. The second initiative, because I'm also in the process of writing a book, is to highlight local authors, irrespective of whether they've been published traditionally or electronically. I'm looking at talking to local authors who have recently published books in any genre and really to highlight, again, their journey, how they went about publishing their books, how they went about writing and what their obstacles were, and maybe others who are in the process can learn from it too.
Now, can you help a person if they're thinking about, a lot of people we run into say, oh, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to get a publisher. And then they think like they just call a publisher and they're like, yeah, sure, I'll take your book. You know, because I'm me, you know. But then in reality, that doesn't happen like that. And they go, you know what? It's taking a long time. Maybe I'll self-publish this, right? Can you help them on the process of self-publishing? Are you familiar with kind of the...
I'm kind of going through that process right now. Like I mentioned, I'm in the process of writing a book as well. And so I'm looking at the options that I have. And I've been talking to people about publishing traditionally or electronically and how helpful that would be for me as an author.
Right.
So, yes, I'd be happy to share a lot of my observations. And, yes, I do blog about it on my website, RoxanaWrites.com. So that's a great place for people to go to see how I'm doing on the process and if they want to learn from that.
So a good person for you would be somebody who's writing a book and is ready to have a copy edited.
Yes.
And then what is it, only English or do you work in other languages?
I do work with other languages. I am from India, so I'm familiar with British English as opposed to American English. And so a lot of times, depending on my clients and the audiences they're writing for, I'm able to help them with the little cultural nuances that they have to be careful about. I also have been learning French for the last 5 years. So that's another area I'm able to accept work in. And then I speak multiple Indian languages, so it helps.
So I want to do a little real-time brainstorming here.
Yes.
Let's take them both and just play for a minute. Either Business Radio X or Raise.
Yeah, do Raise.
All right, do Raise. How would you or some folks in your posse that have these skills and that are in this organization that we spoke of, how could they help a company like
Raise? Right, like take Carol. She has a bunch of stories.
She's got that blog. She's got great stories.
She's got stories, right?
Carol, the minute I met her just before we entered in here, we already started talking about different publications I can pitch her to because I write for different Atlanta media outlets. So we've already been talking about that, and we've already come down with three this morning in the 5 minutes that we've talked. So this is how quickly. So imagine if she came and met all the members of that group of Ed 2010 and all the different outlets we write for and the amount of publicity that will be for her.
Oh, that's right, because they're the editors of the publications.
Yeah, these are all writers and editors and journalists.
And that'll help her
and
get the word out
bloggers.
Her story.
I'm happy to make a speech anyway.
All right, so what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more about the organization and or to talk to you about securing your services?
My website, RoxanaWrites.com, has links to all of my social media on there and my email, and that's the best place to go.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for being part of the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.